Okay, Deuteronomy 5, 12 to 15. This must be Pentecost 2, right? And we're talking about Sabbath stuff. I guess that corresponds to the gospel. Though it's always awkward if you're going to preach on this text, to do this from its own context. You almost have to get into the whole question of Ten Commandments and what the point is here. I would actually take off in the direction of Sabbath rest and what that means theologically. And maybe as it just so happens in the Northern Hemisphere that Pentecost season corresponds with summertime, but remember that's more accidental than theological. To start the summer with a sermon talking about rest and recreation might be a good tie-in as people think about taking a vacation or the kids are out of school now and what it really means to enjoy true Shabbat as opposed to what a lot of people spend a lot of energy trying to find. It's always sort of, yeah, right, you sort of try to find rest by working even harder, and there's sort of a vicious circle there that really is vicious. Well, let's look at the text. Shamor eth yom ha-shabbat l'kodesho. Well, you know what this says. That's always a little too easy. Though it's interesting that shamor is not a real obvious verb form. Shamor is, by the book, an infinitive absolute. An infinitive absolute. And it really is sort of striking here. There's a whole literature on just sort of the form critical questions of, and I mean that in a more neutral sense, sort of the formal problems of the Decalogue. Like, everybody knows there's 10 of them here, but which 10? There are a certain number of negative ones, you will not, but then you've got these two positive ones, remember the Sabbath day and honor your father and your mother. And of course, there's always the form critical folks who say, well, you know, these don't fit the pattern and they're probably the later additions and blah, 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 that they were all negative to start with. Well, again, we can't rehearse or rehash all that stuff, but there it is. And it is striking that suddenly we have Shamor here. It's not even a bona fide imperative. I think you could argue that the infinitive absolute, as infinitive absolute, is your wild card form. This is kind of a point four on uses of the infinitive absolute. You all know point one, which is sort of this intensifying adverb when it's used with a finite verb form, which is not the case here because this is the verb form. So the infinitive absolute essentially substitutes for, it's sort of shorthand for whatever verb form you really ought to have from context. And if that's true, the context would suggest what verb form? An imperfect. You will guard, watch, keep, observe. And you could argue that. You could really say the same thing about the kabed in verse 16. The only trouble in verse 16 is that kabed is potentially a legitimate imperative form, but in the PL, the imperative and the infinitives overlap. And even the infinitive absolute and construct overlap. So you could argue that in 16 you also have an infinitive absolute. which, again, sort of steers you away from declaring that these have to be imperatives. Anyway, honor, or not honor, observe. Now we have just a construct chain. The day of the Shabbat, the day of the Sabbath, Shabbat. And again, Shabbat really means a rest day. Shabbat is the word to take a break. The day of rest, l'kodesho, to keep it holy. Well, all right, kodesho is the infinitive construct of kadash, to be holy, pl, make holy, or sanctify it. And here again, both, I suppose, some theological insight and potential mischief on how we sanctify the holy day. You know, is somehow our observing of it making it holy? Do we make it holy, see, to sanctify it? In some ways, kadash and holiness has to do more with uniques, you know, that old saw that's at least basically true, that to be holy means to be set apart, sort of unique, extraordinary, is probably helpful here, to set it apart, to distinguish it, to make it something special, if you will. Kasher as Tzivaka Yahweh Eloheka. That's easy enough. As Tzivaka Piel of Tzawa, the third hay is gone, with the object suffix. The subject is Yahweh Eloheka. As Yahweh Eloheka has commanded you. Any questions? 12. 13. Sheshet Yamim. Here's a number. Sheshet 6. Yamim is the plural of Yom. 6 days. Ta'avoth. You will avad. All right. You will avad. Serve. Work. Worship. Well, here avad in the sense of serve work, I think, is pretty clear. That'd be an interesting. That would be going away from the text, I suppose, just to play with whether avad is what you do the other 6 days, or what's different about the avading in the terms of divine service on the Sabbath day. 6 days you will serve and do all va'asithas, perfect vowel consecutive, asa, and you will do call milachteka, all your milacha. Milaka, your milaka. Milaka really means your daily routine, what you do for a living. All right? And remember, these aren't people that are really tradesmen. I mean, everybody's pretty much living for themselves in the sense of raising their da da da. You don't, it's not like I choose to be a machinist or an electrical engineer. Or this or that. You do your daily routine. They're all agricultural. And they all kind of work from dawn to dusk. V'yom ha-shivi'i, but yom ha. The article is odd here. What's the footnote? I can barely read it in this light. 14a does add, you'll see that, adds the Beith. Many, some manuscripts, Qumran, Nash Papyrus, have, that's not Qumran, is, no, yes it is, have Bayom on the day, which is very helpful in smoothing this out, especially since Shivi'i is the ordinal number, seventh. And it's clearly an adjective. So this is your adjective, the man, the good one, the day, the seventh one, should have an article on Yom. That could be something that just got lost in the soup. I don't know. In any case, it's the seventh day is Shabbat to Yahweh your God, is a Sabbath. Now, the two here needs to be nuanced. Is this a Sabbath for Yahweh your God? Because after all, he rested on the seventh day. Remember, it's sort of like he needed a day off. Or is it dedicated to that what we do on that day is making it a day dedicated to Yahweh your God? Or is it kind of a date of possession? It belongs to Yahweh. It is the Lord's day, so to speak. All three could be defended grammatically. Is Shabbat to Yahweh your God? Not you will asay, you will do, call milaka. He just said that. You will not do all your milaka. And now he goes on to define the subject of the verb you, or the verb you will do, namely, ata, ubinnaka, ubittaka, va'avdaka, va'amataka, va'shoraka, va'kamoraka. Get it? Va'kol bahemtaka, va'geraka. It's not just you, but it starts with you, personal pronoun, singular masculine, and binnaka, your bane, and your bit. Bit is from bath, daughter. It was originally an I vowel there. The word for daughter is not bath, but bint, B-N-T, which is simply bane with a T ending, making it feminine. It's a female son. But then the nun was assimilated, and it came out as bath. That's what a bint is. Huh? It's a female bane. Your son and your daughter, and your evid, and your ama. Evid is more the general term for any kind of a servant, but when it's specifically paired with ama, then evid is male servant, and ama is female servant. And your shor, your ox, And your chamor, another nice pair, your ass or donkey. Chamor is a donkey. Shor is usually ox. By the way, this is one of the few cognates that come through into at least some Indo-European languages. Shor is in Aramaic, where the shin and the tau, the shin, see, there's actually three sounds. There's a sin, there's a shin, and there's a th sound. And Hebrew uses a shin to mark the T sound, that th, unvoiced TH. And Aramaic uses a T to mark it, which shows you that they heard more of a T than a sh sound, okay? So Shor in Aramaic is Tor, in Phoenician is Tor, in Greek is, what is it in Greek? It comes out in Latin as it comes out on your lawnmower as Toro, but Taurus, right? Taurus, right? Yeah, it's just, Anyway, that's an aside. I always find that interesting. Anyway, Bacal behema is your big animal, almost your general big animal. I've never really done this study. Someone ought to, this is kind of a simple thing that I just never bothered to do. Look up behema. Did everybody kind of have a behema lying around the house? This has always puzzled me. See, who are these big animals? Especially if you're talking about oxen, I think it means like cattle. See? Or your teenagers? Is it large, especially male teenagers, right? Big lugs. And now we get more significant with geirika, your geir, your sojourning guy, a share who in your bit shareka, in your sha'ars, in your gates. Okay? Not insignificant, one that the ger is included. In other words, he was supposed to take a rest too. And, you know, the ger is always sort of, he's on the outside of the circle, but he's inside the circle. All right? And he's more of an insider than an outsider. So what applies to the people of God applies also to the ger. In your gates, and it's sort of anticipating being, though Sha'ar doesn't necessarily have to mean city gates, it's kind of whatever is the entry to where people are living. But it's people always say, oh, well, you couldn't have, they weren't in the cities yet. Well, no, it's anticipating that. Lama'an, so that Yanuach Avdaka. Now he sort of picks out just one pair, which is kind of odd. So that of all the previous listed people and animals, your Eved and your Ama will Nuach. And it's interesting that it switches to Nuach. Why didn't he say will Shabbat, will cease? Nuach really means to rest. Shabbat probably means to stop working. Nuach means to enjoy rest. I mean, those are obviously similar ideas, but not exactly the same. So may Nuach, Kamoka, like you. Kamoka, like you. All right, now this gets richly theological, and I think here's where you can get off on some good homiletical grist for the mill. What are you supposed to do when you're resting? All right, the idea is not that you do nothing. What will you do? Vizikarta, perfect, while consecutive. Here's what you do. You will remember. Ki evad hayitha be'eretz Mitzrayim. That an evad, you, singular. Does this refer to you, the same ata, you as an individual? Or is this kind of the big collective singular, you, Israel? As one gigantic evad. Kind of one big whole collective Eved you were. That's the behemah, the big lug. That an Eved you were, be'eretz Mitzrayim. V'yotziyaka Yahweh Eloheka. Yotziyaka, great parsing form. It's doubly defective. You need a mater letter for the holem, yo, and you need an infixed hirik yod. The yod isn't there. If you saw that, it would be more obviously hifil. It is the hifil of yatsa. And Yahweh, your God, literally caused you to yatsa, caused you to go out, or brought you out, misham, from there, biyad kizakah, u bizroa nituyah, almost a stock phrase in Deuteronomy. Biyad, by means of. This is the base of means. By means of a yad, a chazakah one. Yad is feminine. Chazakah is feminine, a strong hand. And by a zeroa is the rest of your arm. And an arm, a nituya one. Can you parse nituya? This is a good parsing quiz kind of a form. It's from the root nata, third hey. The third hey has shown up as a yod, so the form with the u in there is the kal passive participle. Strong verb katul, or my favorite mnemonic device, Baruch, the guy's name. Baruch means blessed, kal passive participle. So here in the irregular form, it's natu with a yod at the end, and then we've added a kamatz hey because it's feminine. It's modifying zeroa, and you get propritonic reduction to schwa. So it's an arm. Nata means to stretch out, passive participle, stretched out or outstretched arm. By a mighty hand, an outstretched arm. Alkein, therefore, for this reason, Tzivaka Yahweh Eloheka, Yahweh your God commanded you to, interesting, to do. He first told them to shamor the Sabbath day, and now this is why they're supposed to asa the day of the Shabbat. You're supposed to do it. It's kind of interesting. All right. So, I mean, theologically, the point of the Sabbath day, in a sense, starts with physical rest. Now you got to take a day off. This is quite legitimate. There's nothing wrong with that. A little refreshment for body. But what are you supposed to do? Where do you find true refreshment? Is to remember that a slave you were in the land of Egypt, but the Lord your God brought you out there by a mighty hand and outstretched arm. We might translate that as salvation by grace. That's what we do on the Sabbath day. That this all sort of gets swirls around and gets focused on Jesus as the Lord of the Sabbath in the Gospels is obviously not to be lost in all of this. But you could do a lot with the whole sort of theology of rest as virtually synonymous with salvation, what it means for God to affect this change in our life. Okay, unless there are any questions, we'll go on to the, where are we? Is this Mark? Okay. Right.
Yeah, Mark 2, 23 to 28. And I was thinking, Andy, what you were saying, the goal, at least for a Lutheran, is to do the theology of rest, which always brings you sooner or later to Jesus, right? And I was thinking that in the context of Mark 2 and 3, where you have this series of conflict stories, you know, in chapter 2, you have the paralytic and his friends bring him to Jesus, you know, and he forgives his sins and they grumble and he shows his authority so to do by raising the man and enabling him to walk. All the conflict stories are really about Jesus, right? It's not about, although, you know, a portion of that story is the faith that the friends had when they tore the roof up and lowered him down and so forth and so on. But it's really, they're all, the punchline is, who is Jesus? What's his authority? What can he do? What can he not do? You know, and the last one in this series that Mark seems to have arranged and stuck right in the front of his action-packed gospel is the one that ends in 3:1-6, where he heals the man with the withered hand right in front of them all, and the Pharisees go out and take counsel with the Herodians, whoever the heck they are, so that they might destroy him. See, so the issue here is, who is Jesus, right? It's his authority, his identity. And that, too, in chapter 2, verses 23 to 28. So, for instance, a preacher could get, I mean, it would be sort of distracted. It obviously wouldn't be wrong to talk about how tradition, you know, can get in the way, just like the traditions of the Pharisees got in the way. But sooner or later, if you're going to preach this text, it's the remarkable statements that it makes about Jesus' own identity and his authority. So in that sense, the text drives towards its concluding statements in verses 27 and 28. So anyway, let's take a look at the geek in 23. We have this kai agenita plus infinitive followed by kai and the real clause. So this is this, again, sort of septuagentalism. And this is where the King James gets, and it came to pass that, you know. So kai agenita, and then we've got auton, which is accusative because it's picked up, or it picks up the infinitive in four words, para poroiestai. And it happened that he, entois sabbazin, on the Sabbaths. Sometimes the plural is, in fact, often the plural of sabbatas is used, and it just means the day of Sabbath, right? It's just an idiom. So it happened, he on the Sabbaths to pass, diaton sporimon, through the sown places. Sporimos is actually an adjective, it means sown, and it comes to mean the field where stuff is sown. So, and it came about that he was passing through on the Sabbath, passing through the fields. And by the way, the Christological note is sounded here at the beginning, and notice that it's he, singular. Jesus is the one who's passing through. Oh yeah, the rest of the verse, and his disciples. Okay, so this is a text about Jesus from beginning, in a sense, from beginning of the pericope to the end. Right. Then kai hoi mathe tai autu, and his disciples, erxita hadan poiein, began to make the way. Literally, I think it's an idiom just like English, you know, you make your way somewhere. Tillantis, the present participle active nominative plural masculine, the referent has to be the disciples. It means to pluck. As they plucked the stachuas, the heads of grain, right? And then enter the Pharisees, verse 24. And the Pharisees were saying to him, or began to say to him, giving the imperfect a little bit of a force there. Ide, see. This is the aorist imperative, active second singular from horao. Look. Now, ti could mean what, but here in context, the neuter singular can mean and probably does mean why. Why, poiousin, are they doing tois sabbason, dative of time when, on the Sabbath, Ha-uk existent, their favorite word. The Pharisees' favorite word, in Greek at least, is existent. It is lawful. It is proper. Or here, uk existent. So, look, why are they doing on the Sabbath that which, the relative pronoun, the thing which uk existent is not lawful? You know, you're not supposed to harvest on the Sabbath. That's in the Old Testament. And although you are allowed to glean, and apparently there's some material in the Mishnah with this in this regard, and the supposition is that the Pharisees had so hedged about the law, if you will, that what the disciples are doing violates their interpretation, their oral interpretation of the written Torah. So they're not doing a good job. Now, note, so we've got he's going through and they're plucking. Now, this is an interesting part of the pericope. Note how Jesus responds in kind. First, he talks about what David did and what the people with him were doing. Okay. Now, Matthew brings this out explicitly, and you could argue either way that Matthew has, if you're going to go on the synoptic problem with a literary solution, literary dependence, you could argue that Matthew has fully explained the Markan story by making sure that we know about someone greater than David, and that whole thing, because Matthew explicitly brings that out in chapter 12. Or, and I don't know, Veltz, with regard to Mark, actually tends to argue this way, that it's so short and choppy and enigmatic that it assumes a lot of knowledge on the part of the reader. So that the reader, Mark is giving a shortened version because he knows the reader knows the longer version. At least I think that's the way he might argue. Either way, the theology of one greater than David is implied here, although it is not explicitly expressed. But verse 25, So in response to what they begin to say to him, and Mark uses Chi a lot, lege, he says to them, udepita an egnota, introducing the scripture as you know, proof or support for what Jesus and his disciples are doing. And I just wonder if it's a little bit of a slam to the Pharisees. Have you never read? I mean, these are the ones who claim to have read, right? But he says, have you never read? An egnote is the aorist indicative active from anaginosko. Okay.